So we're here, we're talking with Josh Bornfield, who is the fourth composer on this afternoon's concert of commissions, new music for guitar band, solo guitar, dual guitar, guitar ensemble, in this case, quartet. First of all, let me just say congratulations.
Thank you, Ron.
And that's really a double congratulations. One, simply for being awarded the commission in the first place, and then secondly, congratulations on the piece that you wrote. I don't get to say that for the other composers because I haven't heard their pieces yet, but having filled in and playing with yours, and I've been living with it, and it's really, really tricky. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play, and that's not a small thing from a performer's standpoint.
No, that's very kind. Thank you. And that was one of the main goals of the piece, that it should be fun to execute with the entire quartet and on individual basis.
Okay. Well, you know, on that note, the idea that it should be fun to execute, that sort of implies that you have a familiarity with the guitar. I'm sort of asking that as a leading question. Of course.
I am a guitarist, actually. I've been playing for a little over 20 years, and I came to guitar after playing.
So a beginner.
Somewhat, yeah. I'm really a novice. No, I started with cello when I was, I guess, 7 years old, and so the idea of stringed instruments has been with me now for some time. And as a guitarist, I was a rock and roller and a blues and jazz musician for a very long time, and then started studying classically while I was doing my master's at Eastern Michigan University, and have been playing nylon string now for, I guess, 8 years, 8.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. In that time, I've played a lot of music from the 19th century, a lot of music from Spain,
sure.
You know, some music from Central and South America, and they seem to show certain things that I resonate very clearly with as a rock and roll musician,
right.
Coming into the classical tradition later. And so those are elements that have made it into the piece, even though they're kind of hidden behind other facades.
Okay. Have you formally written for the guitar prior to this piece?
I have, twice. Once successfully, once unsuccessfully. My unsuccessful piece for the guitar was written when I was an undergrad. It was a guitar quintet a la Bocherini, string quartet, house guitar, of which one movement survives and was performed a grand total of one time. Not bad, that one movement. The rest of the piece was enough to get me out of my undergrad, which was great. The second piece was a cycle of songs for soprano and guitar that's been performed a number of times by a number of different ensembles.
Oh,
settings
sure.
Of E comes.
Very good, very good. So in approaching then the quartet, this is a new-ish medium.
Mm-hmm.
The instrument isn't new, but the medium of the quartet is new. So
mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about how that influenced how you went about sort of the game plan for this piece?
Certainly. First off, the guitar quartet is a fascinating ensemble to me. I absolutely love it, and I've loved it since the first moment that I heard it. Because when you're writing chamber music, as a composer, you never have the opportunity to write for four of the same instrument.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's so interesting, and the reason I think that most composers will return to things like violin duos or cello duos or you know, two of the same kind of instrument, is because you have exactly the same technical capabilities on the instrument, while each individual instrument has its own very distinct timbre that doesn't become clear until you put it up against another instrument of the same precise make. So with a guitar quartet, the possibilities are infinite because each string sounds completely individual on every guitar, which sounds completely individual from every other guitar.
Right.
And then, of course, the natural limitations of the instrument being long-term sustain or dynamic or you know any of the things that composers complain about that keep them from writing for the instrument,
sure.
They go away completely when you're writing for the quartet. That was what I was looking for.
Interesting. So, in a sense, both the limitations and then also the positives.
Absolutely.
Get amplified.
Certainly. The limitations.
Multiplied, maybe.
Yeah.
Would be a better way to put that.
Limitations is a funny word to use here. I like to think
yeah.
about what Stravinsky said.
Well, you mentioned sustain.
Sure.
So that's one that the guitarists always go back to.
Of course, yeah. And as a guitarist myself, I mean, it's the chief thing that I work on in my technique, and it's part of the reason why I play more steel string than nylon string.
Mm.
Because I can have a greater sustained sound. But again, as Stravinsky said, I find that the clearer and stronger limitations I put on myself within the piece, the freer I become.
Right.
So if you approach the instrument understanding that it has these natural limitations, then when you have four instruments together, those limitations become incredible assets because you can violate expectations over and over again every time it's fresh.
Right. So with this particular piece, there are some kind of interesting techniques that you're using. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. Again, I have to point back to my upbringing as a rock and roll guitarist. There is a fair amount of tapping in this piece. And not tapping in a kind of a Cacky King way, but tapping really in a kind of Van Halen way. But the objective behind it isn't to show virtuosity in the way that it was in the metal of the 80s that you know a lot of classical composers at this point were raised on. Instead, it's to bring out some very subtle timbral qualities on the instrument, specifically the ringing of a string, be it either plain nylon or wound, from both directions. That you have the resonant side that sits over the body and the non-resonant side, which yields a kind of an indiscriminate pitch that only the guitarist can hear, unless you're playing in the sweet spot between frets 9 and 11, and you really tap hard, you can get a kind of a double tone out of the instrument,
right.
That there's a true sound and that there's a kind of a sound that, you know, the story of Narcissus, obviously he stares at the river and sees his own reflection, and then the river speaks up to him, there's an echo downstream.
Right.
You know, there's this kind of opposite sound that's returned back.
Right. So there is a fair amount then emphasis placed on how the sound is being produced.
Yes. Without that technique, this sound of this piece would not be as clear, I think, as it is.
Okay. And just so that our listeners really understand this, the sound of the production sound itself is then a part of the piece.
Yes. And both qualities, actually. It's not just the production of the tone, but it's the way in which that tone has to be produced,
right.
Which is strongly percussive. There's a very, very strong percussive aspect to the piece. But that aspect is a byproduct. It's not a commentary on the piece itself. It's something that you have to get through in order to create the tone that will push you forward through the piece.
Right. Hopefully that will read.
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, that's our job.
Indeed. Yeah, the sound itself is not just acceptable, it's requisite. It's requisite to the piece.
Right.
It must.
And that's, you know, that I would just point out that's kind of an interesting thing in so far as, you know, and as you know, having, you know, gone from electric to steel string to classical, that noise elimination is so much a part of one's daily work and practicing. And here, noise is a tricky word because it carries an awful lot of you know, different connotations with it. But production sound is really, in a sense, kind of celebrated.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it's celebrated in precisely the same way as the other natural limitation of the instrument. Obviously, we have scratchy strings, and we have fret noise, and we have blips and bloops all over the instrument because it's a fretted instrument.
Right.
But there's also the natural quality of the sound, which is substantially lower in dynamic than most other instruments.
Right.
So just as you have production sound being a primary motivator in the piece, so is the absolute softness of the instrument. The trick, I think, behind this piece is being able to engage a listener in an incredibly energetic space without having a super high dynamic.
Right.
So the balancing of a single statement, one person playing normally, will come out, even when that person is playing incredibly softly, as being much, much louder sometimes than the entire ensemble really just wailing away on the instrument.
Interesting. So would you mind saying something about the title?
Sure.
I mean, it's an interesting title.
Sure. The piece is called Murmurs. And Murmurs reads, because of when it occurred in my life. I just finished my doctorate at the Peabody in May, and when I got the call for this commission, I was finishing up my last year of work, which was doing the dissertation itself and preparing my final piece. So I was working 19 hours a day and trying to teach on top of it, and there was just a lot of stuff going on. Well, I got the call for this piece and immediately celebrated. I mean, I've been talking to AGQ for years about writing a piece for them, so we finally had the opportunity. Well, within the same week, I got a call from Washington National Opera asking me to submit materials for a competition that I didn't know that I had been nominated for. And I got a call from another ensemble out in Minnesota, and a call for another one in Boston, all within a very, very short time span. And I didn't know why these things were coming in. I couldn't find a common thread. And I didn't for months, but a couple of weeks later, I started getting reviews back from performances that I didn't even know were happening with my pieces in remote places. And they were, most of them, pretty negative reviews, which is fine. I have no problem with negative reviews. Any composer that has a problem with negative reviews hasn't looked at their Slonimsky lexicon of musical invective. Like, that's not a problem. But
yeah, good company.
Indeed. But at 32 years old, this is a very funny place to be, especially considering that my education wasn't completed. I've never won a major national award. To suddenly have all of this press, all of these people discussing my music, it was very, very strange. And for a short time, it felt like the course of my career was being decided by forces that I couldn't see. People talking in another room. It was almost as if I could hear that talking was happening, but I couldn't hear the discussion. And so as I sat down to really, really engage with this piece, that was what kept coming back over and over and over again. The natural softness of the instrument, the idea of production sound that was timbre rather than pitch-based. These are all things that you kind of overhear through a wall. Mm-hmm. They're murmurs that decide where your life is going without you being a part of the conversation. And so most of the push and pull within this piece is listening to a space in which you hear very distinct sound, but that distinct sound, you're grasping what it is that the sounds actually mean. And when clarity comes, it's often in such a naked form that you wonder whether or not it's honest.
Huh. So where, then, in the piece is the clarity?
It's in all four of the solo statements.
Okay.
Yeah, each one of the guitars has its own very slow, meditative, peaceful, kind of romantic statement that happens among this cacophony of tapping all over the instrument and lots of kind of side noise happening. It's in the unaccompanied spaces where you're just allowed to be alone and speak very, very directly that you come into a sense of what you want to be happening. But it's always overshadowed by this notion of other people breaking into the space, other people speaking over top of you.
Very interesting.
That's why silence is so cherished in the piece.
Right.
And there are a lot of silences. Some of them feel really appropriate and some of them feel grossly inappropriate. And they're intended to feel precisely that way. That said, the piece, it is actually a narrative piece. I wouldn't call it program music by any means.
No.
But the intention of narrative is very much present.
You've certainly set up a very strong sort of dynamic in kinds of in sort of opposition in terms of, you know, the self and then these others who are deciding, and those others who are somewhat within your shot. Sometimes they're louder, sometimes they're cacophonous in terms of their message, not necessarily in terms of the language. And then there are these moments where you get to just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and when you speak alone, which is a kind of an allegory to the life of the composer.
Sure.
That there's a huge paradox here. You know, we function in a specifically and logically social art form. And yet the act of composition is something that can really only happen completely alone, completely individually. If you try doing it in a crowded space or among other people, the sound in your mind gets clouded by everything that's happening around you. So speaking alone is your only pure form of true communication. And the rarity with which you can do that is absolutely cherished.
Yeah, good. Very good. Well, thank you for the insights and thank you again for the piece.
Of course.
And again, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.